My name is Dorothy Keenan. My present address is 110 South Poplar in Carbondale, Illinois. I was an undergraduate at Wisconsin from September of 1939 to May of 1943. I've written down much of what I wish to say, and I hope that won't make this recording too stilted. As a child, I lived on a farm about 8 miles south of Madison. We went to school in the small town of Oregon, and I graduated from there in May of 1939. This year, my class will hold its 45th reunion. I loved to learn, and I was considered a good student. College was a natural next step. My mother would have preferred that I go to the vocational school and prepare to be a clerical worker of some type, but my father had more intellectual interests. What you put in your head, you can never lose, he told me. One day when I was a senior, the principal came into the study hall and sat down beside my desk. He asked if I planned to go on to school. I said that I hoped to. He told me that my scores in the statewide testing program were very good, and that I should go to college. I'd say that was the extent of my vocational guidance. I didn't consider a school outside of Madison. University was there, handy. College was a college. Besides, we had no money. I was the oldest of six, and my father was an invalid. A legislative scholarship would pay the tuition, and my aunt found me a place to stay with an elderly widow of her acquaintance who cared for her equally elderly brother, who had cerebral palsy and could not hear or speak. I would work for my room and board and provide companionship for Mrs. Barzani. This wasn't exactly a typical going away to school setting, but I was in no position to be fussy. She was a lovely person and had rented rooms to students earlier in her life when her young husband died and she was left with two small children. We got along well. She lived on Monroe Street, across from Camp Randall, so I could walk to campus easily. When I was a child and people asked what I wanted to be, I always said a librarian. I made a booklet on this in my ninth grade civics class. But when I found that library studies took 5 years, that seemed out of reach financially. I decided on home economics. This subject had been added to our high school when I was a junior. I liked it, and I was smitten by the teacher, who was very good. But when I went to register, I found out that home ec required chemistry, and chemistry required lab fees, and my scholarship didn't cover fees. I signed up instead for English, which I knew I would like. Before classes started, however, when I was still at home, my uncle came to visit. He had no children of his own and was very fond of us. He asked what I was majoring in, and then he said, "Is that really what you want?" I told him the story. Well, anyhow, he gave me the money, and I went back and changed my registration. Second semester, he sent me more money. Later, they changed the system and charged a flat fee for all, not tuition plus extra fees for lab classes. My later scholarships covered everything, so that problem was solved. When I got my first job, I sent my uncle's money back. And that's how I got to be a home economist. Mostly chance. One of the first days that I went into school, the newsboys stood in the streets, and the headlines were big and black with one word, war. Hitler had marched into Poland. Of course, I was wrapped up in other thoughts, and this didn't have much effect on me for a while. We had several days of orientation. A little green book listed the various appointments, tests, and so forth. I remember that I walked to campus and back 3 times on the first day. Next day, I could barely move. I wasn't used to walking, having ridden a school bus for 12 years. Orientation was helpful, though, because I learned my way around before the campus was crowded with all the upperclassmen. We registered in the all-red gym. It was filled with faculty members, grouped by departments, each overseeing sign-up sheets, one for each class section. You took your list of classes from table to table and signed your name on a section, building up your schedule as you went. If you didn't have an 8 o'clock or a Saturday class at the end of your registering, somebody would send you back. There wasn't much allowance for electives, especially for freshmen. Curriculum was quite tight. I don't actually remember seeing an advisor before registration, but I must have, because I was told that I should take a lighter load, that is one less class, because I was working. This was good advice, but for me, unnecessary. It left me short 2 credits, which I made up by taking an extension course in English composition, summer between my junior and senior years. In orientation, we were introduced to upper-class student advisors, who met with small groups. I took one look at mine, who smoked continuously and had thickly plastered lipstick, and decided I would never have any questions to ask her. I was also embarrassed by the PE department's posture examination, which involved pasting little markers along our spines and then taking back and side views of us, unclothed. This was probably somebody's research project. Teachers make a big dent, and I remember almost all I had. But I'm sorry to say I can't remember much about how they taught. With maybe one exception, which I'll mention later, I knew nothing of research interests and little of reputations. I never paid any attention to other students' opinions about instructors. For one thing, living as I did, I seldom had any contact with other students outside of class. But mostly I found that my judgments didn't agree with those of others anyhow. The famous William Kiekhofer, who gave the Econ 1A lectures, regularly set me dozing. Class began, as did all the big lecture courses, with the traditional skyrocket, or in his case, Wild Bill. One day when he appeared in something different, the ending was new suit. I never could figure out how students decided what they were going to yell. He was really a showman, I think. On the day he gave his anti-silver purchase speech, we had to stay after the bell so that he could get in the punchline. I didn't know what silver purchase was, and I'm not sure I know yet. I liked all my education classes, though. I was hooked from the very first one. Actually, I sort of drifted into a teaching emphasis. The tide was flowing that way. But I was fascinated by the speculation about how people learned, and at once I saw teaching as a way to serve and help, to stand without apology for what was best in life, and to put good in the world. And I still see it that way. So, on to my impressions of my education instructors. My first class was Education 74, School and Society. Incidentally, 40 years later, we still teach these same courses in our teacher ed programs. Mostly, they still have the same names. My teacher was John Guy Fawkes. He was a big man, and he talked in paragraphs rather than sentences. I actually don't remember anything that went on in his class, except for the day of December 8, 1941, which I've already told you about. Next came Education 73, The Child, His Nature, and Needs. This was probably my favorite education class. It was about people, children and youth, how they learned and reacted. It really was educational psychology. When we talked about intelligence testing, I volunteered the 3-year-old from the home where I was staying for a class demonstration. Dr. Rothney brought him to class and tested him. This was interesting to me. We also tried various tests ourselves and then did profiles of our traits and abilities. I liked Dr. Rothney. He was very informal and open. He commented on our papers and welcomed our questions. In this class, we wrote an educational autobiography This was fun. I liked to write. I think some of the things we did in this class were part of a department project, which was headed by Dr. Arvel Barr. He was my teacher for the general methods class. He was also a large man, a little less pompous than Dr. Fox. He had eyes which twinkled. I knew that he was working on trying to find out what made good teachers. Maybe the whole department was doing this, because we were given many tests and interviews for this purpose. As part of this study, Dr. Barr came to visit me on my first teaching job. 5 years later, someone from the project visited again, and after 10 years, I got a questionnaire to fill out. There weren't many women from my class still teaching by that time, I was told. I'm not sure they ever found out what makes a good teacher, though. I go further and say that we don't know how to train a good teacher either. For this class, we did what they called student teaching in our minor area. I was assigned to a junior level class at Wisconsin High School. I began at the second semester, and my general chemistry was 2 years behind me. The teacher was Charles Porter. This was a fairly painful experience, as the students were old hands at harassing beginners. Mostly we observed and sometimes helped individuals. Once I made an item analysis of a test, as we had learned to do in Dr. Rathney's course. Mr. Porter said that that was a waste of time. Maybe this was my first inkling that education practitioners disagreed among themselves, but I still think item analysis is a good idea. To complete my general science minor, I had to take an abbreviated version of the methods of teaching science. I thought a Dr. Davis taught this, but I see that he is not on your list for that time, so maybe my memory is faulty. I liked this class very much. One thing we were taught was how to do a silent demonstration in science, where you showed how, but did not tell anything, so students had to observe very carefully. I still have the handout describing this, and have used the technique many times and taught it to my students. Two other people that I remember in education were Camilla Lowe and Glenn I. Somewhere in here, we had to do some experiences with adolescents in a non-class setting. I was assigned to help students in the Wisconsin High School library. Other students taught Sunday school to children in the orthopedic hospital, or worked with a neighborhood house in South Madison, or perhaps led Girl Scout or Boy Scout, or 4-H groups. Miss Lowe supervised the participation experiences, although I never had her for a class. We wrote reaction cards every week, and she read and commented on them. Maybe she was the person who tried to jazz up my appearance a bit and told me I should wear lipstick when I came to the school. Somebody did. Dr. I was principal of Wisconsin High School, a tall, dark, handsome man who spoke to us briefly when we started our school participation, but actually I had very little contact with him. I had a few elective hours in my schedule, and I chose two education classes. First was early childhood education, Dr. Kai Jensen. Because I was very interested in babies and small children, this really appealed to me. I also liked Dr. Jensen's low-key, organized approach, so then I signed up for his child development course also. I was taking the home economics course where we worked in the nursery school at the same time, so these fit together well. I really had no idea about the reputation and research interests of the faculty, except for what Dr. Barr and maybe the entire department was doing. I also knew nothing about strong or weak areas in education. I was so thrilled with the subject matter, and perhaps naively, I assumed that my teachers had had experience that I hadn't had and knew more than I did about teaching. Unlike students today, I wasn't at all sure that I knew what was worthwhile to learn and what wasn't. I just soaked it all up. We didn't have nearly the amount of practical emphasis that there is today, but I think we had quite a bit for that period. Student teaching for 1 hour a day was really rather laughable in terms of preparing us for the job of teaching. But if you were working for a vocational certificate in home economics, you did get to go out to a school for 2 weeks. I didn't follow that program, but I later taught as a vocational teacher anyhow. In home economics, of course, we did much practical lab work. Some of these courses did not interest me as much as the education or the basic science courses, but I remember various teachers from your list. Mrs. Iva Mortimer was a pleasant, motherly woman who taught our food preparation class. This class had a very scientific slant, and I liked it because of that. We did things like putting egg white in test tubes and checking the temperature at which it began to coagulate. The room was set up like a science lab, Bunsen burners and lab desks, but there were a few regular ranges sprinkled around. I loved learning why foods reacted in certain ways. I taught my landlady about new foods like broccoli, and then we had these at home. Stella Patton taught marketing and quantity cookery, another class I elected. She was a short, round little person who looked like a professional cook. We learned useful points about selecting various foods. I remember weighing spinach to see how much weight it lost when cooked. Once we helped with a barbecue at the Stock Pavilion, and I felt like a real part of the university. Helen Waite was the Home Management House resident advisor. We spent about 2.5 weeks there. She was very attractive. I liked her a lot. She had plenty of problems because many students had no experience with equipment or practical housekeeping. In my group, one threw garbage down the dirty clothes sheet. To make baked potatoes, one put the potatoes in a pan of water in the oven. I noticed this and told her that wouldn't work. The first night we had meatloaf for dinner, Miss Waite found a chunk of glass in her portion of meatloaf. The lid on the meat keeper had broken, and the student cook had not noticed this. Once I helped a girl who was putting away iron sheets, and when I held them for her, I could feel that they were still damp. I protested, but she said, "They're done, aren't they?" I knew they would mildew if they weren't dry, so I took them downstairs and put them back in the rack. I had done a lot of housework, so I wasn't so hesitant here as some. However, I wasn't perfect. I had never loaded the dishwasher, and my first attempt broke a cup. May Coles taught home management and housing, or also what we called household administration. In housing, we had to draw plans for a house to fit on a certain lot in Madison. I took a bus out to see this lot. We had to figure all the costs of construction, and our limit was $10,000. I had to leave out a fireplace because it cost too much. I liked doing the drawing, all the fine detail work. Home management seemed rather dull, but Miss Coles was a pleasant person and a good teacher. One of her favorite sayings, which I've never forgotten, was, "Time spent in planning time is never wasted." She was also my faculty advisor for my first 2 years, but I honestly don't remember what she did in that role. Irene Hahn was another teacher. I can't remember what she taught. It was some aspect of management, I think. One day she called and asked if I could use a ticket to a Wisconsin Players performance. It was something by Saroyan, and I went. It was the first time I had been to such a thing. In those days, one could walk home after dark without fear, so this actually cost me nothing. Miss Hahn seemed to have somewhat liberal meanings. One day she asked me if I had ever read Veblen's Theory of the Leisure Class, but I still haven't. We had Dr. Mendenhall. She was a medical doctor, and few women were then. She did the lectures on reproduction and childbirth in the senior course called Humanics. I remember her emphasis on not smoking during pregnancy. "I smoked before any of you were born," she said, "but I always stopped with each of my children." I remember wondering why she ever started again. My father was a cigarette addict, and I'd already decided that this wasn't for me. Cecilia Avery was a fluttery, tense little woman. She hovered over us so constantly and changed directions so often during the textile chemistry class that I was tense too by the end of it. I guess I'd say that for me, she wasn't a very good teacher. My beginning clothing class was taught by a graduate assistant, Miss Grant. I made pajamas, fitted like a dress. When I actually wore them, they split when I bent over to get something which had rolled under my bed. Mrs. Julia Hill, feminine and pretty, taught our advanced clothing, and she didn't think I was very good. I definitely wasn't a top seamstress, although I liked to sew. We had to do the same amount of work as always, even though the semester was shortened for a couple of weeks because of the war. We remodeled a garment to stay in tune with the war effort, and I made a wool coat and a rayon dress, which I hardly ever wore later because the hemlines were so short when we made them. This was probably the only class in which I felt uneasy about the quality of my work. Mrs. Leindorf, a dramatic, arty person, taught related art and costume design. She told me a hood would be a becoming line for me, and she offered to cut my hair. Several of my teachers tried to improve me in some way. I didn't take her up on the haircut. I couldn't draw or design, so I was surprised to get a B in her course. But I was neat. A few of the teachers on your home economics list were known to me when I was an undergrad, although I do not remember having them as teachers then. Helen Daw came to be in the nursery school, and I had her for a graduate course. And also Dorothy Huschman, who was even then known for her nutrition research. Helen Parsons spent most of her time in research. And Helen Allen was known already for her textile interests. Miss Uehr, in clothing, dramatic and temperamental, was noted for her tendency to stuff bust lines with tissue paper so that clothes would hang properly. And I was glad she was never my teacher. There were two teachers in home economics who influenced me most. One was Mrs. May Reynolds. Nutrition was probably my favorite home ec class. I was very health oriented, and Mrs. Reynolds showed us how diet related to nutrient intake and nutrient intake related to health. She was very persuasive, and she made a permanent difference in my food habits. After this class, I learned to like broccoli, grapefruit, pumpkin, liver, milk, tomato juice, and other foods I wouldn't touch before. I've tried to figure out how she did this many times, especially because I wanted to influence my students to eat better too. One thing that helped was rat demonstrations. We fed some rats on whole wheat bread, milk, lettuce, and apple, some on hamburger and Coke, some on apple pie and coffee. We learned how to care for the rats and not to be afraid of them, so I felt confident and did this later when I taught high school. We also learned how to calculate nutrient intake from our diets. This was very effective in showing what you needed to eat. As part of our work in nutrition, we also cooked for the nursery school. This was an excellent experience, and because I took nutrition in an off semester, when there weren't so many students in it, I got to do this about every other week. I liked being around little children, and I learned to prepare new foods and also to like them, because we had to eat what the children ate. The director of the nursery school was Frances Roberts. She also gave the lectures on child development in the senior humanities course. And I think I'd say she was my favorite teacher. She was dark and pretty, though slightly overweight, and very warm and approachable. But my first contact with her was not so positive. She was very, very fussy when the nursery school was concerned. For example, the children had to have exactly 8 ounces of milk, no more and no less. If we filled a glass too full, we had to go around and take out a tablespoon. Baked potatoes had to be cut in one direction only. If we did them incorrectly, we had to throw them out. One afternoon, another student and I were assigned to make prune whip and soft custard for the next day's lunch. My prune whip turned out okay, but the soft custard curdled. I didn't know what to do, and she didn't know what to do, but we knew that we didn't dare present Miss Roberts with curdled custard. It tasted good, but we certainly couldn't drink it all. So we poured several quarts down the sink, and my colleague went over to the dairy and bought more milk and eggs, and we started over. This time we never took our eyes off the pan. The next day, Miss Roberts cornered me. "For your information also," she said, "when soft custard curdles, beat it." I have found this knowledge useful several times since. Miss Roberts taught about child care. Some students thought it was a waste of time to study about physical care of children, feeding, bathing, handling. We should be concentrating on psychological aspects of motherhood. But Miss Roberts said that your love for a child was first shown through the physical care you gave, and that knowing how gave confidence and laid a good foundation for the mother-child relationship. I knew she was right about that, so I trusted the other things she taught us also. She had us write an autobiography. I was pretty introspective, and I spent quite a bit of time on this. Now I know that it was an unusual performance for an undergrad, and Miss Roberts should have been impressed. She was. She called me up. "Would I like to talk?" Well, I really had things pretty well figured out, but if a teacher called me in, I wasn't going to say no. I was pleased that she thought my ideas were interesting, and that I wrote well, and that I had potential. She asked me if teaching was what I really wanted to do. I said I didn't know. I thought I liked little children better than the adolescents. She said, I remember her exact words, "Well, teach a few years, save your money, and hire yourself off to Merrill Palmer." This was in Detroit, and was considered the best place for child development studies, and she had gone there. She finished, "You may find that you like teaching in high school so much that you won't want to change." I did find that to be true. Francis Zuhl came in as chairman the same year I started school, but the previous head, Abby Marlott, was dying in Wisconsin General Hospital. She and Francis Roberts were good friends. Miss Roberts said to me, "I would like to do something special for Abby. I go to visit her every day. She doesn't need anything anymore, and she doesn't want flowers because they die. You could use more clothes, couldn't you? Would you let me buy you a pretty dress as a gift for her?" Later, when I read the book Magnificent Obsession by Lloyd Douglas, I recognized this philosophy. We went downtown to Woldenberg's, a store I would never have entered on my own. She told me how much she would spend, and we bought a brown shantung dress, pretty yet practical. I thought that I should go to say thank you to Miss Marlott, whom I had never met. I went over to the hospital, and a nurse showed me to her room. She was a large woman, but obviously very, very ill, so I stayed only a moment. I knew that I had done what I ought to do, and I was content. I wore this dress the first day I taught high school. I really needed it that day. Miss Roberts left the university the next year. I gathered that she didn't share Frances Sewell's philosophy for the department. I wrote her at length several times during the ensuing years, and she responded with rambling letters about her work as a traveling family life educator for the state. I'm sure she influenced many persons, and she is dead now. Ms. Sewell was reserved and businesslike, but she impressed me as a very smart woman. I thought her lectures for humanities class on democracy in the home and the role of home economics were the best things I had ever heard. I remember how horrified she was when she asked us how a big mine disaster, where many men were killed, would influence the families of the victims, and found that most students had never heard of this event. How could we not know what was going on in the world, she stormed. Well, students didn't read newspapers. Because I lived in a private home, I did. To my landlady's amusement, I read it standing up so that I wouldn't take too much time for my studies. I really liked almost all my classes, and mostly I thought I had good teachers. I was not afraid to ask questions, and I don't remember ever being embarrassed because I asked a question. Several times teachers went out of their way to contact me, but I don't remember seeking them out. I had no experience with them out of class. The question about clothing is interesting. I can remember many specific garments worn by my high school teachers, but in college, I remember the dress of only one person. Her name was Ruth Henderson. She taught at Wisconsin High School, and she taught our home economics methods class. She always wore brown, or sometimes a brown print, and sturdy shoes. She had long hair, which she wound around her head. She seemed very old to us, but as she died not long ago, at 90, I realized she was barely 50. Mostly she sat at her desk and talked to us, but since I was learning what I wanted to know, I didn't really question her methods. We had three assignments. We made up a unit, we made a unit test, and we evaluated textbooks. The main emphasis was in thinking up interesting activities for students to do. It was apparently assumed that we knew what content to teach. That is really a key thing in my book, but nobody paid much attention to it then. I always wrote my assignments in longhand. My writing was very legible. But Miss Henderson required typing. I was afraid to tell her that I couldn't type, so a friend of my employer typed these assignments for me. In connection with this class, we student taught for an hour a day. Two of us were assigned to one class. It was seventh grade home arts, boys and girls. They had 9-week periods of home arts, fine arts, music, and industrial arts. In home ec, they were taught a unit on packing a school lunch, another on caring for their clothing. Actually, Miss Henderson didn't let us do much, but once she got sick, and we got to take over for a couple of days. In the clothing part, we had a different teacher, and here I got to do my first lessons, sewing on buttons and snaps, pressing pants, and removing stains. I did a case study, as we called it, on a little girl in this class. And because I've always subscribed to the Wisconsin State Journal and had it mailed to me, I've been able to follow her activities in the society pages. I noted when she got married, and once there was a picture of her with her children. Her father died recently. I'm sure she doesn't remember me, but I remember her. Her name was Betsy Boardman. I liked all my science classes. My chemistry lab instructor was Dr. John Willard. He was very patient and knowledgeable. I note that he went on to higher positions as time went on. Biochemistry was taught by Dr. Fred Strong, I think he was working on anti-gray hair vitamins at the time, and this interested me since I already had some gray hair. The physics lecturer was Dr. Winans, and he also had my quiz section. He was excellent. Our lab section had to share a teaching assistant with another section. Many budding physicists were off helping to work on atom smashing, although that wasn't being said publicly. Professor Meek was an excellent lecturer in physiology. But the lab and quiz instructors somehow gave the impression that they were unhappy about teaching women. Well, they did have a point. I certainly wasn't about to kill frogs for all the tests we had to do on muscle fatigue. But fortunately, the storeroom attendant was a kindly old man who helped us out. In this class, I did the only cheating of my educational career. Not on tests, but in giving a little assist where needed to keep the frog leg muscle going. Well, you had to have 2 inches of tracings on a smoked paper that was wound on a drum, and there were no excuses accepted. I was definitely not going to ask for another frog. Probably my favorite science class was Ag Bacteriology, taught in the College of Agriculture. I learned to use a microscope. It was really a thrill to see amoebas and all the other strange things that race and bounce and split and join in the microscopic world. If I had been male, I might have changed my major. Then too, probably had to kill frogs and rats in some parts of bacteriology. Our teacher was a woman, Janet Apple, or something like that. And this was quite unusual in sciences at that time. I liked the humanities too, especially German. My first experience with a language. I was disappointed that the home economics curriculum didn't permit me to take 2 years. My teachers were very Germany, a lady, Paula Kittel, and Professor Riesler. I have continued to study German on my own, sporadically. For English 1A, I had the person in charge of freshman English. His name was Professor Warner Taylor. He was a great fan of Winslow Homer, the painter. He used to bring in paintings and set them up on the desk and discuss the artist's techniques. He seldom talked about writing or our readings, which included the autobiography of Lincoln Steffens. One thing he taught, which I never forgot, was the concept of periodicity, which he defined as starting a sentence with something other than the subject. Doing this made your writing better, he said. We wrote impromptu themes, all of which were shredded later, so I have no idea what kind of writing I was doing. But one day he called me in to praise my writing and to make some suggestions for broadening my life experience. At the end of the semester, he told us to read certain things in the text. And those were the things, the only things on the final. He gave me an A and said that I should take a literature course second semester, which I did. The teacher was Ruth Wallenstein, or Wallerstein. She was good, but it was mostly a repeat of my high school experience, where I'd had an excellent teacher. Were there courses I didn't like? Well, a few. Econ 1A, for one thing. Sociology, which told us about all the troubles of the world, but didn't make any suggestions for correcting them, was another. The well-known pianist, Gunnar Johansson, was in charge of music appreciation class, which I elected. And for me, this was a disaster. We spent much of our time listening to the Pro Arte Quartet and other visiting artists. But since no one ever explained anything about music or what to listen to, this didn't do me much good. The first time that the quartet performed and five people came on, I asked my seatmate why a quartet had five people. She said, "Oh, that's the page turner. My ambition is to be a page turner." Well, this was a new learning for me. Maybe about the only learning. It was hard to tell how many were actually enrolled in this class because people came to listen to the music. Having to go from the Ag campus up and down Bascom Hill to get to Music Hall might possibly have biased my view of this course. I did not read the Daily Cardinal or other publications. I couldn't afford yearbooks. I seldom went near the Union or State Street or even downtown Madison. So I can't answer any questions about hangouts or favorite spots. I didn't have any. Bus fare was only a nickel, but nickels were precious. In my junior year, as I've already told you, I lived with a young couple instead of with Mrs. Brzezanti. The house was on Kies Avenue in the 2100 block. My employer, Mrs. Steele, thought it was so terrible that I didn't have any money at all. She wasn't supposed to pay me, but she did consult with some of her friends, and she decided to give me 50 cents a week. She said, "Now you can take the bus home when it rains." 50 cents a week was a fortune. But when it rained, buses were usually so crowded I couldn't get on anyhow. I did housework in the summers and saved my money. And this would be enough for books and my few other needs. The first year I bought the books listed as required, but I soon learned that these were seldom actually used. So after that, I would wait a few weeks to see what was done with the text before I bought it. Most of my courses, particularly my home economics courses, did not use textbooks. We were assigned readings from journals, and there were books on reserve. In nutrition, for example, we read the original reports of research related to a nutrient such as iron, and then we were expected to pick out the important ideas and to synthesize the findings. I spent a lot of time in the agriculture library and the medical library, which was below ground level in a basement reached by a winding stairway. I seldom went to the big main library. When I first started college, I tried to read all of the reading assignments made on the assignment sheets. I soon found that that was impossible. And after that, I started at the top and went as far as I could in the time I had. Students in home economics and education were fairly homogeneous in backgrounds. Mostly we came from Wisconsin villages or rural areas, and we would eventually go back to work in those same areas. The home economics classes were almost exclusively female, although I do remember one man in our foods class. This was so noteworthy that his picture was taken and published in the newspaper. I do not remember having class with any black students, though there may have been some on campus, probably were. I was really shocked when, after graduation, I made a trip to Washington, D.C., and later to Virginia, and realized how little I knew about segregation. Well, I knew about schools, about seating on trains and buses, but water fountains? I saw one labeled white, and it was actually green or blue. I didn't understand this. Later I learned that public libraries, theaters, even churches were off limits to black persons. I couldn't see how I could get to be 22 and be so ignorant. I had heard people express prejudice, of course, especially towards Jews and blacks, but I don't remember any instances on campus. I'm not sure that I would have recognized discrimination unless it was very blatant. Personally, I took my religious training seriously, and I had already decided that all persons were to be valued and considered as individuals and treated with respect. I knew that being a professor didn't make a person more moral, and I didn't swallow everything that my teachers said, particularly when they talked about something outside of their field of study. After Pearl Harbor, training programs for military personnel on campus were stepped up. The second semester in 1942 was shortened so that more men could finish before they had to leave. On campus also there were WAVES. That was the Navy Women's Group. They marched in formation from place to place, and at first this looked funny because they didn't have uniforms yet. I was in the home management house, and we had to have several parties and dinners. We decided to invite 40 WAVES to tea on a Sunday afternoon. 45 minutes before it was scheduled to begin, I looked out and saw one coming up the walk. Since most of the girls and Miss Wade, our advisor, weren't dressed yet, I had to entertain her. She explained that she had to go someplace else during the time of the tea, but she didn't want to miss seeing the house. This building was a gift to the university from some utilities group, I think, and many people thought it was the president's house. It was a lovely place. We also invited men from Truex Field, which had just been named then, to an informal evening party. These men and the WAVES, too, came from many parts of the country, but they were about our age, and we felt sorry for them, having to prepare for war instead of for a peacetime career. The big flying fortresses rumbled from Truex over Madison every day, and we were thankful that they weren't carrying bombs, as the planes were over England and Europe. It was a sentimental time, and we became more patriotic. I've already mentioned a few changes in scheduling, such as shortening the semester with no reductions in assignment. The withdrawal of men wasn't so obvious in our home ec classes, or there weren't any to begin with. I took botany as a senior. That was normally a freshman class, so it didn't seem odd to have mostly younger men as classmates. The draft began at age 19, but many fellows enlisted earlier. Rationing affected our foods classes, I'm sure. This was a problem for the instructors, not for us as students. I'm sorry to say that I have no memories of Louise Greeley or President Dykstra. Whatever they did or didn't do skipped over me. I do remember going to the graduation reception on the lawn of E.B. Fred's home on the Ag campus. Perhaps he wasn't president yet, and this reception was held because of his role in the College of Agriculture. I remember this because my mother was wearing one of those pins with a star, which indicated that she had a son in service, and Mrs. Fred noticed it and commented on it. The Freds were very homey, down-to-earth people. It made everyone feel at ease. My last memory of my undergraduate career is of commencement. This was held in the field house on a late May day, beautiful day as I remember. It was fashionable to be a little disdainful of this ceremony, but to me it was very moving. I was proud and happy as I went to pick up the honor cord from my shoulder. First time, and the last, that I ever deliberately sought a sign of status. My parents gave me a wristwatch, ordered from Ward's catalog, my first watch. They sent me a sheet of paper from the catalog and said, "Which one do you want?" It was too large, but I was so enamored of it that I put it on, and for 40 years I wore it high up on my wrist, further than most people wear wristwatches. This kept it out of harm's way, and maybe was why it lasted 40 years. As a matter of fact, it just conked out last fall. My classmates and I wore our white foods uniform under our robes. That saved buying a white dress, which few of us had. Mrs. Barzani had ice cream and cake afterwards. She was sorry to lose me, and I was sorry to leave her home, for I had been very happy. Today's graduation ceremonies have turned into madhouses and messy fiascos, and I'm in favor of abolishing them at both high school and college levels. When I graduated, I had only one career goal: to become a good teacher. Yes, I think I have accomplished that, although the first few years were like flying through the mud. I do not have the charisma which makes a great teacher, but I have become competent. I taught for 11 years in Wisconsin high schools, earning my master's at Madison during summer sessions. I greatly enjoyed this because I didn't work, I was just a student. Then I did graduate work at the University of Illinois, and since 1961, I've been on the faculty of Southern Illinois University. I had no idea that I would end up in college teaching. Frankly, I have never liked this level as well as I did the high school. I think this is mainly because you do not get as well acquainted with students in college. Teaching is not the main goal at a university, and this situation is getting worse. I have discovered that it is the teaching I like, not the level or the subject. But I did not want to stay in high school, because I think one gets too old to be most effective there. I have pursued my interest in young children by teaching religion classes for my church. I have developed a kindergarten curriculum and taught it for some 25 years, adapting it as I learn more and as times change. Currently, I'm doing the same with groups of third graders. This activity gives me much satisfaction, perhaps more than my regular work, although I am not unhappy as a faculty member. This year, I was asked to take on the academic advisement for our vocational education department. I work half-time at this and find it very enjoyable, and also a challenge, which is good at this stage of my life. I'm still teaching a couple of semesters of classes a semester, and this seems to me a good way to wind down my career. I thought the quality of my education at the University of Wisconsin was high. My teachers, for the most part, were excellent. I am especially happy to have had the good science background, which home ec ed students don't get today, incidentally. I loved the beautiful Madison campus, even when the snow made climbing the hill difficult. We wore stadium boots and heavy coats. When I began school, girls wore hats, but headscarves were just coming in. Mrs. Barzani made a large, shawl-type one for me, and I wore it gratefully. I never remember the university being closed because of the weather. Many buildings were old and creaky, but this didn't bother me. It sort of added to their charm. I would have liked to have had more work in the humanities and in language, but I have found ways to broaden my background here. For many years, I have belonged to a great books group, and we have read and discussed most of the classic authors. I have taken or audited other courses, and I read a lot on my own. One cannot do everything in 4 years, and I believe in lifelong learning. Right now, it bothers me that the two most frequently asked questions in advisement are, what is the easiest general studies course? And how soon can I get out of this place? Maybe students were asking those questions in 1942 and 3, but I didn't know it, and I wasn't asking them. When I started this tape, I thought I'd probably run out of tape before I ran out of words, but that hasn't happened. I have enjoyed making this recording for you, and I hope that the information I've given you will be useful in your project. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to share my memories.